Hey there, friends. Before we get to a brand new episode of the official Do Good Better podcast, we want to thank you, the listener, for subscribing and sharing with all of your nonprofit friends. Most importantly, we need to be thanking the sponsors to this very show. Hey, if you're in the market for a CRM system that makes your life easier, there is no better item in your fundraising toolbox than DonorDoc. DonorDoc is not only the premier sponsor to the show, it is the premier and intuitive CRM system that not only has everything you want, but has zero things you don't. No one needs complicated, especially when you wear 10,000 different hats at your nonprofit. So get DonorDoc and use Do Good Better at checkout and get a month free to try it out. Thanks, DonorDoc, for being an awesome sponsor. Hey, speaking of life being easier, fundraising is not. And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight and tips and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a more content, more done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to either commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, join Do Good University. Hey, it's our brand new membership site. We have hours and hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the entire Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions. All of that is for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes for details. Hey, get ready for another episode of the official Do Good Better podcast.
Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast, where we help small and medium-sized nonprofits do good better. Join host Patrick Kirby as he chats about the latest nonprofit trends, challenges, and success stories. Plus, you'll get actionable advice to help you be even awesomer. If you're a nonprofit professional, volunteer, or supporter, this show is for you. We'll tackle all the big topics like fundraising, marketing, and volunteer management. Our only goal? To bring you the information and inspiration you need to take your organization to the next level. So grab that giant caffeinated or adult beverage and get ready to do good better.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kirby. And of course, we talk with people who are going to help our small and medium-sized nonprofits do good better. And I'm going to pause at the top of the show, and I am going to be unapologetic about how fanboying I'm going to be about our guest today. He's one of the reasons that I think the way I do, that I have sort of encouraged nonprofits everywhere to think bigger and bolder and more awesome. And nearly 10 years ago, when I found TED Talk, I kind of fell in love with the message and the human being, and I cannot actually believe that he is on the podcast today. I would love to welcome our guest today, Dan Pallotta. Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast.
I'm happy to be here, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
For the maybe three people who are hopping on that have no idea who you are or what you do, I would love to start out with perhaps a 5,000-foot view on who you are, what you do, and why we're talking today.
Let's see who I am, what I do. I'm a failed aspirational National Hockey League goaltender. That's you know, the underlying psychosis of my life is I didn't get to play in the NHL because Danny Clancy was just a better goalie than me. So I write books. I cause trouble to the system to try and change the way we as a culture think about nonprofits and giving and the role that they potentially could play in transforming the world and solving social problems if we would unleash them to their true potential and not suffocate them and constrain them with anachronistic constraints from another age. So I've spent the last 20 years of my life trying to change the way the culture thinks about charity, maybe like in the same way we tried to change the way the culture thinks about gay marriage, right? And I think it's that important, and I think it's that big a 180-degree shift. And I'm also a dad. I have three kids, and I'm a husband, and I'm a songwriter, and that's kind of That's kind of me in a nutshell.
If there's anybody who relates well to the hockey thing, my brother became a rock star and sold enough to get a gold record, and I taught him how to play guitar. How unfair is that in world?
Isn't really? This? What, I know. Would I know of him?
Maybe. I'll send you a link, and then maybe you can rock out to some early 2000s pop punk bands, and it'll be a great little bonding. Cool. One of the things that I've always wanted to ask out of the gate is, because your TED Talk is so important to the mindset that a lot of organizations either just kind of, it blew their mind. So like, we can actually talk about this in public. We can actually think about this a little bit differently. We're not constrained to the idea that we don't have to be profitable and we can market and we can do things. When you wrote that TED Talk, when you scripted it out, did you think or know it was going to have the impact that it did or the response it was? Or was this just something like, I'm going to talk about this is what I care about and go?
Well, I guess I have two answers to that. I had written Uncharitable. It came out in, I think, 2009. And so I had developed a keynote slideshow and a presentation on it. And I maybe gave that talk, you know, 6 or 7 times a year. So not a lot for 2010, 2011, 2012. So it wasn't like I was scripting a talk from scratch, not knowing how any of it would go over. I had some idea of how the talk went over. But then when it came time to go to TED, first of all, it shrunk down from a 45, 50 minute talk to an 18 minute talk. So you're, of course, insecure that I don't have enough time to be persuasive here. And I was the last speaker at that particular TED conference. It was the last time they did it in Monterey, and then they moved it up to Vancouver. So I was the last speaker of four days of TED Talk. So I had 4 days to really psych myself out. And, you know, they had the most interesting people. They had the woman who discovered the giant squid, and she had high definition video and photography of these massive underwater squids. And they had brothers, young brothers who were banjo prodigies, and just all this interesting stuff. And, you know, I just began to get more and more panicked that a talk on the economics of the nonprofit sector was going to go over like a lead balloon. Like, it just wasn't going to be exciting enough, sexy enough, spectacular enough, given everything they had seen. So I was blown away when it got the response that it did in the room that day. I mean, just this extended standing ovation. And you knew then, like, whoa, this really hit home with people. People have been ready to hear something like this. You know, it's not a nonprofit sector only message, because TED stands for technology, entertainment, and design, right? So while the context is how can we use these things to better the world, it's not a nonprofit conference. I mean, TED is nonprofit, but it's not, you know, they talk about all kinds of things there, you know, body language and marriage and relationships and robots and, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that response itself, though, is so akin to a lot of smaller nonprofits or medium-sized nonprofits who are looking at some of the big boys and girls, the big organizations are like, I don't feel like I belong here. I don't know how this is going to land. I don't really know how to position ourselves. We're the last one to do X, Y, and Z. So to know that that's kind of the feeling, even though you know that your message is good, even though you know that this is kind of a great thing, I love that as a connection. What was one of the first things that you had as a response? Like, was there somebody who came out of there that you just had an unexpected, like, oh, hell, I didn't know that was how you felt, or that was kind of a really cool moment immediately after that?
Well, Chris Anderson, who runs TED, agreed to let me do the talk. But I think it may have been an indicator of his assessment of how that talk would go over that I was the last speaker at the conference on Friday when, you know, a lot of people are starting to leave. So he came up to me immediately. He said, if I had known you were capable of giving a talk like that, I would have been beating down the doors, literally, to get you to speak. So That was an indicator right there. And it opened his eyes. And when he and I and Richard Branson began working on Audacious together, a big part of that was because of the sea change in the way we can think about the potential of nonprofits. Dean Ornish came up to me, if I can be of any help. Edward Norton is calling me, let's go out to lunch and talk. So, a TED talk that's a decent hit opens up a lot of doors.
Right.
I mean, I went to Harvard. There's a saying about people went to Harvard. How do you know if somebody went to Harvard? They usually tell you in the first 60 seconds of meeting them. But I say I went to Harvard, but I honestly think that those 18 minutes on the TED stage had a bigger impact in terms of networking connections than going to Harvard. That's just how powerful that platform is.
What was some of the pushback you get? Because I think a lot of nonprofits, when they read this or they even watch the TED Talk specifically, and they'll excitedly go to their board chair. Have you heard this? Have you thought about this? That we don't have to play small. We can think, audaciously. We can act more like a business. We don't have to be wary about where our money's going to go to pay for the people that do the programs. That's I think is the most powerful message ever. If people don't exist, your programs don't exist kind of message. And the pushback becomes, well, yeah, that's cute and all for coastal nonprofits. How does a nonprofit take that message and apply it to, I'm here in Fargo, North Dakota, right? We're here in flyover country where if it's done that way for 58 years, Dan, it's good enough for the next 58. How do you start with that message and go, no, that's not how any of this works?
Yeah, people have asked me, what's the strongest argument you've heard against your ideas? And I've heard strong opinions, but I've never heard a strong argument. I've never once heard a strong argument against it. And I the things that come up, the kind of cliche responses to it are, well, yeah, but you got to really be worried about money contaminating motives. Once you introduce money, then, people stop caring about the kids and it becomes all about the money. And my response to that is, well, that's funny because, we don't worry about money contaminating the motives of, Tom Brady, who we paid millions and millions of dollars to win Super Bowls. And that guy sure seems like he still wants to win Super Bowls. We don't worry about money contaminating the motives of, Bruce Springsteen or Adele or Sam Smith, who we pay millions of dollars to write music and they seem hell-bent on trying to better their music each time they're out with it. So what's so different about people who care about children and the poor and those who are ill? The other argument is, well, yeah, I know the overhead measure isn't great, but it's the only measure we have. Well, that's like saying I'm going to take my kid's temperature with a broken thermometer because it's the only thermometer I have in the house. You might kill the kid. That's not a good reason for using it. And even if it's a smaller community, look, do you want to solve problems? Doesn't matter if you're in Fargo. Do you want to solve problems? Do you think hiring the cheapest person you can possibly find is the way to solve problems? Do you think denying your nonprofit the ability to let the rest of Fargo know about the nonprofit, because Coca-Cola makes sure everybody in Fargo knows about Coca-Cola, and McDonald's makes sure everybody, and Salesforce, they all make sure there must be something to this, right? Making sure everybody knows about you. So it applies everywhere. The ability to take risk on a new fundraising consultant. Hell, they might be able to start bringing in money from other parts of the country. So everything about the old ideas doesn't work in the big city, and it doesn't work in the small town either.
One of the things that I love about the book turning into a movie, which I'm congratulations again on this. I think that gives it just an excellent visual and new medium to talk about this, and then the practicality of kind of how it worked and what big ideas came of it, right? That's great. What are you most excited about sharing this in a sort of the movie aspect? I mean, you could read it right now. It's been around for a while. What's so exciting about a movie?
A movie is a very different animal. And I knew I wrote Uncharitable maybe 3 or 4 years after An Inconvenient Truth, the movie came out, and I knew that it was the kind of subject matter that would lend itself to a documentary in the way that An Inconvenient Truth had. And I just felt that, you know, when I started my career in the nonprofit sector, I grew up in a four color world. You know, I grew up looking at movies in color and television in color and billboards in color. And I went into the nonprofit sector and it was black and white, like literally. Like, you can't spend money on four color brochures. You can't spend money on it's got to be black and white. You know, that's how we've always done it. Otherwise our donors will get upset. Well, that's dull. You know, you can't bring the issue to life. So early on in my career, let's do four color brochures. And later on in my career, it's like, why always books? Like, we deserve a movie. And this is not a down market, low rent movie. I mean, we raised $1.5 million to make this. The production values are great. Stephen Gyllenhaal directed it. He's Jake and Maggie's dad. Edward Norton's in it. Darren Walker, the head of the Ford Foundation, the head of the Nature Conservancy, the head of No Kid Hungry, Chris Anderson, the head of TED. I mean, this is a powerful movie, and it's emotional, and it's time the nonprofit sector had a luxurious, persuasive, emotional, educational tool like that. So much more powerful than a book. And you can see it together in community at a theater or at a screening or at a screening you do at your home and have a collective experience. So, you know, the nonprofit sector has never had anything like this. It's at the top of a long list of things the nonprofit sector has never had, whether that's a, you know, an ad in the Super Bowl or a retail store on in Times Square, and we deserve it. And I think it's going to make a big difference. And it's aimed at the masses as well as the nonprofit sector.
I love about, and again, we're kind of, you know, recording this during pre-Super Bowl week, and the Super Bowl ads are 7 million a piece for 30 seconds this year. Yeah. Which is a fascinating number. I'm always imagined that. And I think a lot of nonprofits will sort of look at that and say, oh man, if only we could use that money, if only we could do some of that good. And what I love about this movie is gathering them in spaces. And I almost imagine that being in the communities and having community foundations and leaders within the organizations have it shown giant theaters and then having a discussion about it. What's the, maybe the big message or the big thing that you want the movie done, it blacks out, you've got the credits rolling. What's the first thing that you want people to just blurt out or say or start from the conversation that makes this think bigger topic keep going on after they watch the movie? What's the first thing you want them to feel, or that you've watched it? Like, what is that first reaction that you had?
Well, the first reaction will be, and we've done, you know, screenings, trial screenings. It's, oh my God, I have been thinking about this in completely the wrong way. I can't believe it. I'm embarrassed. They apologize. I'm never gonna think that way again about this. Like, okay, movie's done its job. And then people say, you know, well, what do you want people to do? It's the first thing you want people to do after they see the movie. I only want them to do one thing. Get everybody you know to watch this movie. Go get everybody you know to watch this movie, and then get them to get everybody they know to watch this movie. Because you alerted to it earlier. What can a person say? That's very difficult, what you can say. If you're not as trained at this as I am, you know, if you haven't heard every argument, if you haven't made every argument for 20 years, you may not be able to say very much. You know, you get better at it over time, but the movie will say everything for you in perfectly and emotionally and in technicolor. So use the movie as your tool, you know. Yes, you know, you want to watch it. If you want to speak about these things, watch it 10 times and nail down the points and be able to speak about them. But if you want to change people's minds, don't try and recreate the movie with a few sentences. Get people to watch it. Mm-hmm. You know, tell them, look, I can't explain it to you. I'd have to watch it 100 times, but it completely changed my mind. It's powerful. You're going to be blown away. Go see it. I'll eat my hat if I'm wrong, you know?
Is there a specific industry that, you know, you've worked with, you know, countless organizations and spoken in front of countless groups.
there a specific group or sector of the nonprofit that you think that this could have the biggest impact on to almost believe in themselves? I lean as I read it, and as I you know, as I've followed you and how you've chatted about this topic endlessly for the last number of years, is I always think art and the theater organizations that do such incredible things, but then almost limit themselves by like just not playing with as a theater kid, right? As just an obsessive music lover and sort of just an art champion or whatever, I almost think that those are the ones that are going to get almost as fired up as anybody. And they've got the biggest ability to make change for everything going forward. That's where my brain goes to, like, that sector could just use this and just roll with it. But is there any other group that you just think that's like, boy, this group hears this message, they're going to go and just roll. They're going to just blow up.
Well, I think of the nonprofit sector in kind of subsectors, you know, maybe if you made a pie chart of it, and part of it is higher education, and part of it is religious institutions, and part of it is hospitals. In fact, those three make up the lion's share of it. And then you have arts and culture organizations. And then you have, you know, it's not a, people in the sector don't love the word. I actually think it's a beautiful word and has beautiful roots. Then you have what the public thinks of as charity. Mm-hmm. And what the public thinks of as charity are health and human services organizations. The organizations working with the abandoned and neglected and the outcast in our society, those working in impoverished communities or with impoverished people, those working with orphan diseases, literacy, domestic violence and domestic abuse, crime, those, you know, those kinds of organizations where the real human suffering lives. And I think that's where the greatest potential for lives, for creating a world that works for everyone with no one and nothing left out. And I think, as Buckminster Fuller said, and I think that that's where the biggest benefit can come. The arts and culture organizations can certainly benefit from it in the same way, and they can leverage and multiply the impact of it by screening it and showing it and spreading the word about it.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun little way to use something that is so artfully done and crafted as part of your own craft as sort of building some of that, which I think is just an incredible thing. Sort of a redirect from an art thing. Because I've been wanting to ask you this question for quite some time, is that you're like an accomplished musician is like one of the things that I know, you know, unaccomplished or not accomplished enough hockey player is one of the bits, but like super accomplished musician is something that it just kind of got on my radar with the sort of releasing of a couple of things, Mailman in particular. And it's just one of these wonderful things. And I've taken that that particular song, and I know there's a lot of different meanings you can take from it. And if you haven't heard it, we'll drop the link in, and you can stream it on Spotify and all these other places. But one of the things that I think the small, medium-sized nonprofits get away from is really remembering why they do the things they do. And I know it's a very small part of the song itself, but when talking with nonprofits, reminding them to read the thank you notes or the letters of appreciation from whatever interaction that they have, I immediately drew the line from remembering and sort of predicting what things would happen as those little small thank you notes. I myself keep the stack of them, and I'm having a crap day. I just read them, and it's always circling back to the mailman as how, you know, I wish I could unopen or read unopened letters and kind of bit. Was there any correlation into the nonprofit sector with this, or am I reading into it because I'm obsessed about it and I just associate you with such as the sort of like I'm a guru and I know these things and I'm going to write a song that's going to speak to you in that particular language. And again, I'm going to drop the link in the comments. You just have to listen to it. It's fantastic.
You're the only person who has associated the song The Mailman with nonprofit direct mail and acknowledgement. So I know that was not
yes.
an intention in writing the song. You are unique. I wrote that song thinking about how, you know, the mailman or the mail carrier is a messenger of some big moments in our lives has been and continues to be to some extent, whether that's an invitation to a wedding or the announcement of a birth or a college acceptance or rejection letter or a foreclosure notice. And the mailman gets to see our future a few minutes before we do and gets to chronicle our lives and gets to watch the our children grow up as they, you know, run out from the driveway when they're three, and then they're on tricycles, and then they're on bicycles, and then they're driving cars. It's just something very nostalgic and romantic and sentimental for me about the mail carrier and the mailbox.
This is why I like shouldn't be allowed to have conversations with anybody, because I bring it always back to a nonprofit bit. And I was like, wow, and then someone's going to appeal and they're going to see this thing grow and it's going to be amazing. And they've got a thank you note. So it's one of the things, but it just as an accomplished musician and as somebody that is, it's pretty remarkable. And I just wanted to let you know that that thing's available and you'll click in the show notes and go listen to it. It's pretty fantastic.
Thank you.
One of the things that I think a lot of nonprofits wrestle with is a first step. When they read something like Uncharitable, or they sort of watch a TED Talk, when they watch the movie Uncharitable, they're going to look at this and go, everything seems to be, I love this. It's super great. I can't even figure out what my first step would be. If you had a suggestion, or if you would maybe even speak to that small or medium-sized nonprofit leader who's looking to make a difference in the way they think about it or the way they talk about it with their donors and supporters and board members. What's a really good first step in order to wrap your brain around taking everything that you're going to showcase in the movie that you wrote in the book to just move this a little bit at a time to start making this revolutionary change in your community or the nonprofit specifically?
It's start out understanding what your dream is, because if you don't have that, there's no reason to do it. If you're not thinking big about something and thinking about it in a different way that could actually contribute to making a difference, if you don't have some new idea, some innovation, or some better way of executing, and a dream rather than, you know, I want to start a cancer charity to honor my, you know, friend who passed away from cancer. Well, that's lovely. There are other ways to honor that person. Now, if you said you're going to, you know, you want to start a cancer charity because you've discovered this line of research that nobody's funding and you think it has huge potential and you want to find the cure for cancer in 10 years with it, then go for it, you know. But too many nonprofits have forgotten that they have a right to dream, and that if they don't have a dream, there's really not much of a reason for them to be there. You know, like if you don't have a dream of solving the problem, of eradicating it once and for all, you know, what's the sense? Now, that's different for an arts and culture. There's nothing, organizations, nothing to eradicate there, but still, what is your dream? You know, what new idea can you bring to arts? Like, you know, I've always wondered, how come museums are open during the day when everybody's working and they're closed at night when everybody's socializing, you know? You know, like what new idea are you bringing to bear? And then what's the first step? You know, how are you going to fund that? What's a plan for funding that? Come up with a plan for funding that and bringing other champions around with you. But that's really important to me that you know, like people ask, how can I get my board members more engaged? How can I get my donors more engaged? And often my answer is, stop boring them to death. Stop boring them to death with the same old thing and no hope of it ever changing, and budget deficits that you need to meet and keeping your head above water. That is not how Elon Musk is building Tesla. He's building Tesla by exciting the world about it. That is not how Steve Jobs introduced the, you know, got the iPhone to become something, or Apple to become something. He created products that delighted people and that nobody had ever seen before. Do that. You know, don't be this, you know, sad, woe is me, we don't have enough, we're doing the best we can, we're a good cause, you should give to us just because we're a good cause. Stop that. Excite people. You have a right to excite people. If you're not exciting other people, guess what? You're not excited yourself. Go do something else. Go open a bakery, for God's sakes, and make nice cupcakes and smile at people in the morning. It'll have a bigger difference.
I was told by a former boss once that he said, Patrick, enthusiasm isn't going to raise us enough money. And I looked at him and I go, bet your ass it will. And it came from the whole idea that that you sort of articulated in Turn Charitable. And I'm so excited that I get to spread that joy of enthusiasm and championing those same ideas to nonprofits. And you're really one of the reasons why I do what I do and I speak about what I speak about and I interview who I interview is because this is the type of attitude that I think nonprofits just need to work on. It's fantastic. And I am, I'm blessed to have you on the podcast. I would be remiss, however, to celebrate with you the upcoming actual premiere of this movie. And it's cross country and there's a whole bunch of things. Could you talk about premiere dates, times, show things, please?
First of all, if you're interested in anything about the movie, you can go to uncharitablemovie.com. That's the website for it. It's going to premiere at Lincoln Center in New York on March 28th. Then at the Directors Guild on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles on March 30th. The website has the other dates, but I think Washington, D.C. is April 4th, Boston and Chicago are April 6th, and then it'll be in 15 other U.S. cities for a few weeks in April, and then streaming in May. And we're encouraging people, if people want to organize screenings on their own, we'd absolutely love that. So, you know, just go to uncharitablemovie.com and sign up for the news and updates, and we'll get in touch with you about screenings.
Not to say that we're going to get in touch, but it's already happening. I just am so excited about that. First of all, thank you for just being in the space and making sense of something that I think a lot of nonprofits knew inside, but had no way to verbalize and no way to sort of vent their frustrations on what they thought they could be, number one. Number two, thank you for sharing that with everybody, not only with your book, but your TED Talk and now the upcoming movie and Uncharitable. And then thanks so much for being a mentor, not only to myself in just the vast nonprofit world, but I know there are countless human beings who listen to you and go, that I'm going to quote you. I'm going to work on doing exactly what you say. It's really wonderful, and I am I'm so grateful for you, and especially being a guest here on the official Do Good Better podcast. We're going to drop all of those links in the show notes, and I just can't thank you enough for the time and the perspective and just general awesomeness.
Thanks for having me, Patrick, and thanks for having your show, because your show is an important medium for spreading the word about this, and the nonprofit sector is desperately in need of new media, because the old traditional trades are not quite exciting people the way we need to. So thanks for your show.
It's a wonderful reminder to, hey, sign up and follow this podcast and sign up on your way out of the door. Go to the show notes, click on everything that that Dan was mentioning. We're going to put all the show dates and the premiere dates there as well. Thanks so much for stopping by and listening, everybody. And thank you, Dan, for being a guest here on the official Do Good Better podcast.
Thanks, Patrick. Bye.
Fundraising is hard. And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight and tips and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a lot more content, done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, I want to invite you to join Do Good University. It's our brand new membership site. We're going to have hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions, all for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes